Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Support WrestleTalk!
Donate on Patreon.
Did the Shield reunion just save Raw? Forget about all the boring matches. Forget about all the recycled stuff that's been going on for months anyway, because the Shield's back, baby. I'm Ollie Davis. This is El Fagador Laurie Blake. Welcome to the Wrestle Ramble review edition of the post SummerSlam episode, where, yeah, it ended with a really good main event and a hell of a closing angle.
Do you know what? Forget the previous two hours and 50 minutes or whatever it was. That final 10 minutes makes it all worthwhile as far as WWE are concerned, I think. But yeah, that actually was a heck of a finish. That main event actually was very good. I think it's indicative, though, of what we were saying about SummerSlam is the same thing. WWE are booking themselves out of a corner of their own devising in the whole Roman thing, and it's now, let's just chuck everything possible into the mix to get this guy over finally. Next week they're going to get The Rock out. The week after he's going to have some puppies. Like, it'd be not in the Jerry, not in the Lawler way.
Well, wait, he's like the big actual dog.
Yeah, so have some little dogs, get some sympathy. This is just another bit of, like, you know, open the show with him coming out. He gets a mixed reaction.
Well, he says, I would say a bit more negative than mixed.
It was mixed to begin with, and then became more and more negative as time went on. Until he mentions someone he's going to have a match with later in the show, Mr. Balor, a previous Universal Champion who never got his rematch, and this is the time. Now he gets his rematch. And then later in the show, that's the main event. And everyone's pretty hot for it, to be fair.
Because it was a great match.
It was a great
match, they built it up big time as well. They did the full-on ring intros of each person. Reigns is there holding aloft his Universal title. Balor's obviously smiling at it. And they had a corking about 20-25 minute match that the crowd were really into. Like, they were so behind Balor.
Yes.
There were a few near falls.
And he went over really strong in it as well. Like, he looked really good.
Yeah, and people were going crazy off of setup moves and near falls. And even I got into it after a while. I thought, oh, we could win off this sling blade. Really genuinely win the Universal title. But this was all really setting up that Braun Strowman was going to come out eventually. There was a segment earlier in the show where Braun said, hey, good luck out there, buddy. But whether you win or whether you don't, I'm cashing in my briefcase because I didn't get to do it last night. Because that mean Brock guy threw it so far away from me and hit me with a chair.
I couldn't walk to it. It was so far.
Oh, you threw it really far away.
I'm not the walker among men. I'm the monster among men. Not the fetcher.
So, yeah, you had that element of drama in the background of this match, which only heightened it all, I thought. And Braun's music hits. It distracts Roman. Balor's like, I'm in here. And he runs to presumably do a, like, this sort of front drop kick to set up the coup de grace, but Reigns speared him instead.
Well, he'd gone for the coup de grace.
Right.
And then Reigns had rolled out of the way.
Oh, okay.
As he was climbing the turnbuckle, he took an extra little second to have a little look at Braun and what Braun was doing. And then I think that gave, because originally when Braun came out, that gave Finn the opportunity to hit the drop kick, do the sling blade, etc., etc., set up to go up the turnbuckle. And then he took that just that moment too long, had to do the roll through. And then as he turned around, he eats a spear. And then Reigns gets the 1-2-3. And then Braun comes into the ring.
Well, yeah, like you said, Finn looks strong because it did protect him somewhat. It wasn't just Reigns having to be scared of Braun. Like, Finn had to have one eye on Strowman at the same time.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So, yeah, really, really worked. Finn, I mean, where this goes next week, who knows? But
it's just going to be this again.
Yeah.
Exactly the same.
And Braun gets into the ring after the match. So I'm cashing in my briefcase. And they cash it in, but the bell doesn't ring, crucially. Reigns has a plan of his own, because out come Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins in full Shield cosplay.
Regalia, yeah.
With the Shield music. Someone pointed out on Reddit, and I agree with this wholeheartedly, that they didn't, you know, Reigns still effectively has the Shield entrance music.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently there's a few tonal differences in there. It's a bit slower. I reckon that's just because everyone's become preconditioned to boo that music and hate it. So when the Shield music hit, it just sounded like Roman Reigns was going to come out and save himself, which I'm sure Vince McMahon would have been very happy with. But it wasn't. It was Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins. If the music was different, you know, if you hadn't heard that music since the Shield reunion last year, I think the pop would have been incredible.
Well, it got a little bit of a pop because it had the little police scanner thing at the front.
Hotel.
Yeah, exactly. So, it worked. I mean, people went nuts for it.
But I was really into it.
Yeah, I like the entire end of the show. I wasn't sure really what was going on with everyone, because Braun had said previously, I don't want to cash in. I don't want to run in when someone's back is turned and cash in like everyone does with this contract. I do things face to face. However, in this, he comes out in the middle of the match to distract the mat, like, and sort of causes this disruption in the match. So unlike when he came out against Brock and Roman, before the match had even begun, he comes out, and then that was kind of enough of a distraction for Brock
certainly
to lose.
Certainly affected it, yeah.
Yeah, certainly affected things. But this, he came out in the middle of things and literally turned the tide on Roman, who was winning at that point. Then he gets in the ring. Finn's KO'd from the spear. Roman is celebrating his victory, and Braun just gives him a kick while he's down, and then cashes in. So, like he said, "Oh, I'm not one of those bad guys that comes in and cashes in behind your back, but I will kick you while you're down. I will give you a little punt."
He literally did that thing that people used to describe a bad person.
Yeah.
He kicked him when he was down.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I'm not that against this, because in the Attitude Era, everyone was kind of a tweener. Stone Cold would stunner very nice people for no reason, and it was cool, and he was definitely over as a babyface. And that's across the board, like Undertaker, babyface, would just choke slam a referee because he was pissed off. And I like that, maybe not to the Attitude Era extremes, but I definitely like characters showing a lot more attitude. Now, what I found interesting here is the Shield. Were before a babyface unit, but they were, this was like old Shield, like debuting Shield, where they were all a terrifying cohesive unit, and they're heels, effectively. They're operating like heels. Mm. And Braun Strowman, like you said, was also kind of morally complex in that he is also a bad guy. And while I don't see this as a Shield heel turn or a Roman Reigns heel turn, I think maybe this is the only other thing that can save Roman's crowd reactions, and that is turn him into this kind of mob boss.
Yeah.
He supplants Rollins as the architect or the leader of this faction, and you get him over that way. I thought this was supremely cool. Probably next week they'll all be out cutting comedy promos. But for right now, I thought it was good.
Yeah, I thought it was definitely like, it's the one thing you want to see from Roman, really. It's like, you want to see him leading the Shield, and you do want to see them maybe not being heels, but having their own self-interest at the forefront of what they're doing. And that it kind of has to be in spite of whatever anyone else is doing. And I think in this sense, it was interesting to see them come out to protect the cash in as if it was like, you know, like it was like Strowman was going to cheat to win. It was like, oh, this is cheap of you to come out and do it after Roman's already had a match and not just invoke it some other day and have your contract and sign it in. Because actually, to be fair, if Roman's now just handing out universal title matches every week anyway, that contract is basically meaningless.
Yeah.
It's only good for cashing in after he's already had a match, because otherwise you could just go, oh, can I have a match? And he'll go, yeah, probably, yeah, sure.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because they're the Hounds of Justice. You could argue that they're doing this to make it a fair fight. But the Money in the Bank briefcase is within the rules of the promotion.
Yeah.
So it is technically fair.
Triple teaming the person trying to cash it in is
Then it's like eye for an eye, or have you gone too far the other way? I'm really interested in where they're going to go. And it's interesting that Strowman was very much the babyface here.
Mm.
Like, the crowd was still really cheering Braun. Yeah. I think they probably, because they wanted to see a title change. And there was a bit where Braun kicked Roman off. The crowd exploded when they were about to give him the triple powerbomb.
The shield bomb,
but then they did hit the triple powerbomb.
Because that's what it's called.
Well, Michael Cole calls it the shield bomb now, but Back in the day, it was the triple power bomb. And
it's definitely just a one power bomb.
And when they
it's one power bomb with two extra arms just holding.
It's a triple, man.
It's with a little bit of scaffolding.
How would you do the triple power bomb? Just everyone on each other's
shoulders. It's the Eiffel Tower bomb. That's what it is.
And the crowd chanted "Ball S word" at that finish, and you go off air with some applause for Shield, but mostly boos because they beat up Brawny.
I like the idea that going forward, this could just be a running thing that Braun never gets to cash in. Like, he keeps going to, because it's the one thing that's never really been done. We've had like Carmella teasing that she would cash in for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. We've had people coming out with a briefcase and leaving it, and that sort of thing. And people then surprise cash ins when it's not really been mentioned for a while.
Yeah.
It's more interesting now. This is like probably one of the only things that's not been done. Someone continually coming out and literally handing over the briefcase and never actually getting to cash it in.
Yeah, and not in a heel way as well. Yeah. Like, I think it's been done quite a lot as a heel, but this is a baby
it's
face.
It's like an ultra baby face thing to be like, I'm literally entitled to this title shot, and you're going to stop me every single time. It's brilliant.
So I guess where this is going to go, Hell in a Cell is the next pay-per-view. Yeah. Braun could say, well, I'm going to cash in my contract for that match, the main event of Hell in a Cell or whatever, to keep the rest of the Shield out, and I can get you by yourself. There's no way into that. When does anyone ever possibly break into a Hell in a Cell? No one ever interferes in those matches.
It's impossible. It's impossible. but he tweeted last night saying he'd beaten all of them separately, so he'd happily take them on together.
Taking the Revival B-team feud mentality.
Yes, yeah, let's...
Yeah, that was a corker. But yes, overall, very excited for this. Just like the idea that with the Shield back together, it opens up a lot of six-man tags, which was what saved Raw in that 2011 to 2014 phase. Those were rough times as a Raw watcher. but it was the Shield coming out week after week, stealing the show. And now it's a freaking hour longer, Raw.
Yeah.
Boy, it felt it this week. One more thing with all this. It was a moment, wasn't it? That powerbomb.
Yeah.
Michael Cole really wanted to tell everyone that was a moment. What a moment, what a moment, what a moment. Let's get on with the full review.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So Raw actually kicked off with Roman Reigns coming out to that mixed reaction. Mm. I would argue more negative.
It definitely got negative. There was a lot of,
there was a you still suck.
There was a you suck chant and then a you still suck chant.
Yep, it's a couple of minutes later. You still suck! And that's where he makes a noble challenge against Finn Balor. Balor comes out smiling.
Mm-hmm.
And so no demon.
Old smiling Finn Balor.
No demon.
No, it was good enough for Corbin, but not good enough for Reigns.
No.
There's no point wasting it. I mean, it's so many hours in makeup.
Someone said that there's a 48-hour recharging period that you have to go through.
He's got to suck up enough souls to summon it again.
That's probably why. I just wish they would explain.
It's like Dante's Devil Trigger. That's what
it
is.
And Corbin comes out. I've played Devil May Cry.
Yes!
Video game reference.
One
point.
Singular video game point to Ollie.
And Baron Corbin comes out and he's angry because Finn no-showed that SummerSlam match. I thought this was great from Corbin.
Yeah, I did like that.
He was like, the demon came out instead. And all the smoke and the noise confuse me. Mm. This is great stuff from Corbs. And Kurt Angle comes out. You suck, floppy wrists. He says, well,
he had enough time to do that for a while, didn't he? Mm. He always finds time, even in he has to interrupt a very important conversation to say something very important. He's like, still got time for this for a bit.
Massive brawl happening in the ring.
Yeah. You suck,
floppy wrists. And he says, well, you can face this guy. Out comes Bobby Lashley. This was a boring match.
It was dull, wasn't it?
Went on a long time as well. At least one commercial.
You also really, really noticed the fact that it was Coachman this week and not Renee Young. Because he was talking nonsense.
Boy, was Coachman noticeable.
he's not inconspicuous, is he?
Yeah, because that was one of the good things about Renee. She didn't have this stellar performance, but she didn't screw up either.
No.
And when you've got Coachman trying to make these sports comparisons that just don't work.
Yeah, he is a metaphorical cul-de-sac.
Yeah, he often drives conversations into this dead end.
Yeah.
To the point where Corey, a professional commentator, has to go, no, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So that is frustrating.
Again, you're just talking in idioms.
it was just a boring match. It was mostly rest holds. But Lashley won with it was like a power bomb up, and then he flipped him off to the side and did a side slam thing, which looked impressive, a bit contrived maybe. But then we got my notes are out of order. Then we go back
Stephanie. Stage.
Oh,
no, Corbin
Kurt Angle,
that was him.
And Paul Heyman, no Stephanie yet. She will be all over the show. And Brock is Paul's trying to get the contractually obligated rematch, and Kurt says no, pretty much, and he does a New Yorker impression. Forget about it, which got a big pop for the international traveling crowd.
Hot dog.
Yeah, and then Baron comes in and he says,
"That was it, yes,
I'm going to complain to Stephanie McMahon about you." And Kurt really, like, because me and Luke rewatched SummerSlam 2000 recently.
Mm.
And you've got that whole Kurt Angle, Stephanie McMahon love triangle storyline with Triple H that makes up that fantastic main event. And good grief, this couldn't be further from that. Like, Kurt Angle has been so bad as a general manager since coming back. It's been a year and a half now.
It's been dreadful.
Yeah. And just like they did with Mick Foley, who, weirdly enough, in some like that 2000 era, was the commish, and he was fantastic. But they booked him into oblivion. And it's this Stephanie McMahon. It's this presence over the general manager. You cannot have a babyface general manager on Raw at the moment.
But the problem is the fact that Stephanie's never there. And like, so that obviously that's why you bring in Corbin as the constable. But he's got no authority really. So he's just talking about this non-presence. Like, well, Stephanie said I can do this. And it's like, well, but she's not really ever here.
Yeah.
Doing anything. Like, she, because she's
on the phone.
Because she's an absentee commissioner. It's irrelevant, and like, Corbin has no power because he keeps losing matches. So I think what he needs is like a little team around him of like they need to be like his sheriffs or something. You know,
oh, that's what sheriffs.
Or his he needs a sheriff's department.
Chuck a Drew Gulak in there as a sheriff.
Yeah, absolutely. Though he needs a little thing to have the other side of that coin and that control.
Mm. He had
and then Kurt Angle needs to actually try to do some good stuff rather than just go, oh, okay, Stephanie, it's fine. Yeah, and just go with whatever he's being told.
It's completely emasculated every week. And it just, like, it's such a confusing power
by his
structure.
Own wrists.
Yeah. You got general manager, you got constable, then you've got the commissioner of Stephanie, and then you've got, I guess, Vince McMahon as well. Watch
the
Triple H
the
doing
dictator.
All this. Yeah.
The tyrant.
Whereas you look at the other SmackDown shows, the other WWE shows. They're all, like, really well done, general manager-wise. Mm. Paige, Drake Maverick, Regal. Like, those are solid authority figures, baby faces, who aren't undermined by any confusing structure elsewhere. Shane's just Thanos'd away, thankfully, after his 2017. And they're all British, so maybe that's it.
Mm, that's probably the key.
We just need an English person in there. Then we got... speaking of Triple H, they had a video package recapping Triple H and Undertaker's epic feud.
Yes, there was a lot of push for the old Super Showdown here, wasn't there?
Super Showdown.
DJ. Yeah.
So that's they're billing that's it as the last time ever. And that video package...
WWE are very good at doing one time only kind of thing. So this is they'll never go back on that.
Did this... I felt like the placing of this video package undermined the Triple H promo later, where he said that wasn't going to happen, and then it was. We'll get on to that. Then we had the Riot Squad taking on Sasha Banks, Bayley, and Ember Moon for a fresh new matchup.
The Boss and Hug and Goddess connection.
Mm. So this just has to stop.
War got it. The Boss and Hug and War connection, I guess.
I can't be bothered to think of a three-person team.
Well, that's about as far as WWE got with thinking about it as well. I can't be bothered. Boss and Hug connection, I don't know.
Yeah, it's... why is this feud still going on? There's no genuine animosity there either. There's no blood feud element to it. There's no, like, oh, we're jockeying for position in the women's... The women's division on Raw is woeful at the moment. We'll come on to it more in a later segment.
Yeah.
But this was a good match. I've got no interest.
It was perfectly fine.
It was fine.
It just didn't do anything, did it? Mm. It does nothing for anyone in it. Like the Riot Squad picking up a win doesn't gain them any momentum because they're not going anywhere. Sasha Banks and Bayley could probably do with some momentum because they've the only ones who've had a storyline recently. As the Riot Squad have kind of been hampered by the fact that Ruby Riot was out for so long. Mm. Ember Moon has momentum. She had a winning streak until. Sarah Logan, of all people, was the one who broke. The first loss on Raw was to Sarah Logan.
Did a lot.
Ember Moon was like being set up as this next thing,
I don't know if she was. She hasn't had a... How crazy is this? She hasn't had a storyline since she was called up.
No.
Like, she's had matches. She's occasionally been used as Ronda Rousey's stand-in best friend.
Mm.
But really, there's been nothing. So, this... great, like all six of these, even Liv Morgan's starting to get good, but there's five very good women here, and they're just stuck in this purgatory of facing each other. I hope it stops soon. Then we got that Triple H promo.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Got some NXT chants.
How did you think that line went down? NXT was amazing on Saturday night, and SummerSlam took it up a level.
SummerSlam was a thing.
Yeah,
that's it. Through gritted teeth, he was like, and then SummerSlam took it up a level.
I feel like he rushed that bit.
Yeah.
NXT was great. Hey, wasn't it smart crowd? Woo, Triple H, we love you, NXT daddy.
NXT.
And SummerSlam was good too. Okay, so back onto the Undertaker. Yeah.
Well, he didn't even say SummerSlam was good. He said it took it up a... Did he say he took it up a level?
It was on
a different level. It was definitely on a different level. That's what he should have said. It was on a whole different level.
Yeah, it was a different thing.
A lower one.
That I didn't have final say over. Let's just make that clear, everyone.
NXT is my thing. NXT.
And then in like super baby face mode, he said, hey, I'm a fan just like you guys.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought he was going to say, I'm marking out, man.
And he said, I will work until the day I die to make sure that this is here for everyone.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means, but...
I think it's just... Triple H is really good at being subtle in a completely unsubtle way.
Mm.
Like, he's named all the NXT events TakeOver. He gave his father-in-law a dinosaur skull as a present. Like, these are not... Like, you kind of look at it and go, oh, yeah, that's just like, that sounds like a Triple H thing to do. Mm. And then you think about it. No, this is actually quite an in-your-face, aggressive way of saying, this is my company soon. Die, old man.
Yeah, that's it.
So he goes on to talk about how he's not going to wrestle The Undertaker at Super Showdown because they had that WrestleMania 28 match.
And then him and Undertaker and Shawn Michaels had their moment on the stage where they had their photograph, and they all felt like it was the end of an era. That era then ended because Shawn Michaels went away. Undertaker put his hat and his gloves in the ring and went away. And then Triple H took his trunks off, put his suit on. He kept saying, I feel like I'm going to take my suit off throughout this whole thing. Yeah. So he said, he took his trunks off, took his gloves off, took his tape off, sorry, and then put his suit back on. And that was the end of the era. But now, seeing all the matches over the weekend, he's getting that itch. He's going to take his suit off.
Yeah. It's uncomfortable now.
Yeah, I can hear Nelly playing in the background.
I want to get my pants back. I just want to run around oiled up in my pants again. I thought this was a weird... Like, it was a very well-delivered promo. Triple H is an excellent promo, I think. But it was just that he goes, yeah, that was the end of an era. Like, reminding us all the reasons why it shouldn't happen. Yeah. And then saying, but it is. And I guess that's a good way to work the crowd, bring them down and bring them back up again. But, like, logic-wise, how do you expect me to believe you went on this journey of doubt?
Yeah. But also, it just doesn't feel... It doesn't feel exciting to say, contractually, we've had these discussions backstage about, at this show in Australia that's really big, with the guy from Australia who is setting up the entire thing, we've had this really long and interesting discussion about you, Triple H, the game, putting your trunks back on and having a match against Undertaker, the Phenom. How do you feel about that? Well, I'm quite conflicted because we had quite a good match in a while ago. But actually, do you know what? I will do it. It's like, where is the storyline? Where is the angle to this thing? Like, just saying, yeah, we've been booked to have a match. And I was like, oh, and now I'm like, yeah. It's so rubbish. It's like considering like they managed to make the John Cena thing work
to some degree. Yeah.
Like going like, I'm going to keep calling you out. I'm going to keep cutting really good promos on you. And then when you do show up, it is like this mysterious, playing into the Undertaker character, this mysterious force, you've decided to finally come out and do something. And then the fact that it was a squash match was even kind of better in that sense. Do a feud. Like,
yeah, totally.
Just make it a thing. Like, why is he not coming out and just going, I'm the best. I'm the best there ever was. I'm the best there ever will be. And I'm going to prove it by beating the Undertaker.
Mm.
For one final time.
Or he turns it into a bit of a blood feud, similar to how Cena did. Because all the material's there. He said, look, you know, we had this. You retired. Shawn, my best friend, has stuck to his retirement.
Yeah.
And you came back.
Yes, exactly.
Just because Cena started calling you out. Well, now I want to put an end to you.
Yeah.
I want to really, like, retire the dead
man. We had our end of the era match, and you won.
Yeah.
I'm going to end your era this time.
Yeah,
this is
exactly,
it. The end of the era... Like, he should be coming out and saying that felt like the end of an era, but actually I thought about it and I don't want it to be, because you were the victor. I want to be the victor. I want to be the one remembered as the one who got the final 1-2-3.
Yeah, this is much better. But they seem to be going the babyface route, which is fine for a big super attraction show. I guess it's going to be on a Saturday night. It's just
it's a talking poster. It's boring.
It's a house show. After this, we got Dean Ambrose making his in-ring return.
I like this.
I thought this was the best thing on Raw apart from the main event.
Yeah, definitely. It was. I obviously pointed it out a lot on commentary, but I like the fact that he's rejigged his moves.
Mm.
He's doing more powerful actual wrestling moves rather than like... I used to hate the fall back into the ropes clothesline thing just because it's so...
momentum, Laurie.
Yeah, but he never got faster. It was so contrived.
No, it's the torque. Yeah, okay, but then
you look at Tyler Bates' version of that.
Yeah,
and you're like, yeah, that's what Ambrose should have been doing. But it was very cartoony, and I just feel like, you know, there's a few of the old Ambrose moves I'd love to see him still bust out. I love the I don't give a crap suplex of just picking him up and just going the X-plex. I thought this was more interesting seeing him starting to do I'm much bigger now
and I'm much more of a threat in the ring kind of moves, rather just being the brawler character that he was before.
And it's before he was a goofy lunatic, the vast majority of the time. But here, I feel like he's the serious, unhinged psychopath guy, which is a really nice switch on that character. I read on the Cage Side Seats review, and it pointed something out that I kind of missed. So much about Ambrose's old character was talking. It was a great promo. He'll make these goofy little quips here and there. But I don't think he's spoken a word since he's been back.
We've not heard him.
Not on mic or not off mic either. Like, even when he was with Seth, he wasn't screaming stuff, I'm back. So
he's like, he seems like he's muttered things, but he's not like, he's not blabbing the whole time. Mm-hmm. And in this match, there was a great call into that sort of like, he's really unhinged now. Like, because he gets out of the ring to confront McIntyre, and Seth has to run around and get in the way and stop that happening. Like, it's really, really, it's smart stuff they're doing with him. And in the same in the, as we see later in the main event, he's the one that chases Braun out of the ring and starts wailing on him and starts clearing off the desk.
He goes for it.
He's the one that's going like, we're doing this through here. Like, because they were kind of like done with it. And then he was like, no, gets out. Takes all the monitors off sensibly. Very sensibly takes all the monitors off.
You don't want to really hurt
Yeah, yeah, no. You want, but it looks crazy.
But there was a good finish to this as well. Like, it was just really interesting seeing Ambrose wrestling that way against Dolph. And then it kind of broke down outside between Seth and Drew. Mm. Seth runs through the ring to hit a dive on Drew to take him out.
And Ambrose is holding Dolph's leg at the time, isn't he? And he just flings it out the way. So Seth sort of goes through. It's like opening the turnstile for him. Like, there you are.
I love this. I thought it was really good. And then Dean hits the, like, a weird Dirty Deeds where he almost like starts to do a suplex, then drops him down. And
well, no, he was countering something, wasn't he?
Was so
he was he countered. It was Dolph's swinging DDT.
Big DDT.
So he
leaps
up for the big DDT, and then Dean grabs him by the pelvis.
Yeah.
And pushes him off, and he lands on his feet and catches him in the Dirty Deeds and nails it.
Which is really,
really cool. It's a really cool like finish, and again continues to sell the slightly different character for Dean, which is all I really like. Like, I wasn't a big fan of old Ambrose, but when he came back, I was like, oh yeah, I'm into like this version of Dean Ambrose. Looks really cool and seems like a very legitimate lunatic.
One you can actually get behind. Because I liked Ambrose back in the day when he would go serious, because he's a great promo. But for them, the dressing up as a security guard, all the Ellsworth stuff, as fun as it was, you know, it wasn't.
We just didn't, because his lunatic was also just like, he's unhinged at that point. But it was, he never did anything risky enough to really feel like it. Like, you know, like a few elbow drops here and there. But that was, he didn't feel completely deranged. And I feel like this feels like actually he's going to go to some extreme level, maybe just by hurting people, not doing like crazy spots. It doesn't have to be Jeff Hardy to be nuts, but I like the idea that he's doesn't really have any interest in winning matches particularly. He just wants to hurt people,
which is
great.
Then Braun Strowman tells Finn Balor backstage, good luck tonight, by the way, I'm gonna beat you if you win,
you're small.
And Elias, after this, he does his usual Elias shtick, has kind of dropped the fact that his guitar broke. He mentioned it a little bit, but he's not like, I'm going to find. So that's our duty now. That's the new WWE quest.
The next mystery.
And then, in an inspired interruption, Kurt Hawkins comes out and says he wants to end his 218 match losing streak. The crowd were really into this. I personally think this is a fantastic story that should be featured on Raw every week as your comedy break.
Mm.
And it's like, weirdly, they only bring him up every like 4 months on TV.
No, it's stupid.
And Hawkins fires up, and he was never going to beat him. Elias beat him very quickly after a brutal high knee right out the gate. The crowd are really into it. It's such an easy story to get invested in.
Mm.
And when Hawkins eventually does get that win, if you build it up enough on TV, it's going to be huge.
It's the reverse Undertaker.
Yeah.
It's the reverse Undertaker. And I really like Kurt Hawkins. I think he's a good promo. Like,
yeah.
I loved when he used to do the Star Factory stuff, and he was and he would come out like on Main Event, because I saw it at taping of Raw. They filmed the Main Event stuff beforehand, and I saw the one where Aleister Black comes out, and obviously it's amazing it's Aleister Black coming out anyway, and it was, that was just after he debuted at NXT anyway. But the whole setup, it only works because he's so good at setting up the idea that he's going to make a star of someone by letting them be him.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. It's
really,
an
ingenious
really
take on the jobber enhancement talent position. Unfortunately, after that, so hopefully Hawkins will get featured all the time, and then a WrestleMania win in the Battle Royal.
He main events WrestleMania and he beats Roman Reigns. That's what I want for the Universal title.
It begins now, the Hawkins push of 2019. Unfortunately, we got Authors of Pain versus Titus Worldwide still.
Weirdly, they were hinting at Apollo Crews and Dana Brooke having some sort of work-based relationship or something
a romantic relationship.
Well, they were having secret chats when Titus was looking for them backstage, and like it was slightly flirtatious, I thought.
Yeah, they're similar heights.
Yeah. That's all it's based on, is it?
Yeah, people used to. People tell
Tinder,
me.
Tinder romances now are not done by distance, they're just done by heights.
Well, as far as I know about my short lived tenure in the online dating world, like 5-6 years ago, I liked it before it was cool. I put down my shoot.
You were forced to do it before it was cool.
My shoot height weight. My shoot height, I mean.
Yeah.
Which was just a smidgen under 6 foot. And of course, didn't get many offers, because I imagine there are search parameters set by ladies looking for a 6 footer. So I changed the 6 foot, and I got at least two more inquiries.
More.
Yeah,
inquiries. Yeah. Dear sir,
are you really 6 foot?
Dear sir, I am writing to you with regards to your dating profile that says you are of a height of 6 foot. Please respond with a measurement.
Yeah.
A picture and measurement, thus proving you are, and then maybe we could set up
a picture of you out some kind of roller coaster height entry requirements picture. Yeah. So Authors
you must
of
be
Pain,
this tall to ride.
Authors of Pain won here, and I thought they looked pretty good. I thought Apollo Crews looked pretty good as well here. But there was a really nice spot where he had pinned one of the authors, and they kicked out by pushing him all the way up to his feet, and he immediately hit a standing shooting star press. Very impressive.
Yeah, that was cool.
But overall,
they swatted his enziguri away as well. That was quite fun. There was a lot. It was a nice mixed match. But how many times have we seen this before?
Yeah, and there's no story. It's just WWE think the story is, oh, but this classic feud. It's gone on for months. And it has, but in a very bad way.
Well, this feud only came about, surely, because the Authors of Pain were just beat them 1 week, right?
Yeah.
And then the Hogan thing happened, and Titus had done his lengthy post. So they had to have, on the next Raw, they obviously felt like from backstage, they had to give Titus a win here, and then accidentally cause this to happen down the line.
Yeah. I feel that's totally what happens.
Yeah, it's just a... It doesn't have a story because there was never meant to be a thing.
And it's a shame. At least Authors of Pain won here. After the big five or big four pay-per-views, it usually feels like you can just reset a character. Like you could just go, Authors of Pain are a big deal now. And they run in and destroy the B-team and the Revival later on. But they didn't
do that.
With
the last chapter, the world's worst move.
Yeah, but they didn't do that here. So I feel like the Authors of Pain are going to be in this spot. I don't know.
They're in holding, aren't they, at the moment? They're just...
But the more you're in holding, the more likely you're going to be there forever in the undercard.
I think don't have them on telly for a while. Like the problem with Raw is that they have to fill 3 hours. They have to keep trotting people out when there's nothing for them to do. And it's worse than them not appearing.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
It is much worse for the Authors of Pain to appear and have a pointless feud with Titus Worldwide than it is to just not have them and then have them turn up just after the point that, say, the Revival finally ascend to become the tag team champions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They get their big moment and it is ruined by the Authors of Pain.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be great. Those and all the classic NXT matches they had too. What was also not great off the back of that Authors of Pain Titus Worldwide match, I thought personally, was this Ronda Rousey women's title celebration thing, which I hated.
Nonsense.
I hated. I thought it was weird. I thought it didn't really make sense. I thought it was patronizing to both us as viewers and the concept of women. Yeah. It was Stephanie McMahon in the ring. She's going to present the women's title to Ronda Rousey. You had the entire women's division around the ring, not on the apron, but outside. And you had the heels, like the Riot Squad and Alexa Bliss and Alicia Fox, clapping stuff Stephanie McMahon said. On the other side, you had the baby faces looking grumpy, like Sasha Banks and Bayley. And then you had the Bella Twins, because...
Somewhere in the middle, yeah.
Yeah, because they haven't gone home yet. I don't know why they were still there.
No. But I feel like you should have committed in this... Like, if this is what we're doing, they should have just committed and sort of made it, like... Just get all the other women, just get everyone, and make it some sort of evolution tie-in thing. Like, because it looked so sparse as well. Like, it was like you really see how lacking the roster is on Raw, because it was like 8 people and the Bellas,
who've
been flown in especially to be extras now.
Need some hot bodies,
yeah.
And it's more depressing to just see them as. By the way, hot bodies is a term to just. Of filling space in a room. I don't want to
not
be
your
accused
of
objectification.
Not your opinion on the Bellas.
It was to see all those people there, even Bliss now, I would say, they are so... The way they've been booked, they are so far down the pecking order compared to Ronda Rousey that you're like, oh, no, wait, you haven't booked a strong women's division or a strong women's evolution. You've booked one person.
Yeah.
And... The flip side of that is that now there's no interesting matches to have.
No.
And you've kind of dismantled this women's division while trying to make a women's division. And it's really... I hated everything about this. I hated the execution. I hated the fact that Stephanie McMahon was healing it up just a few weeks after doing the evolution, I'm a babyface now stuff.
Yeah.
It was really inconsistent. It tells me as a viewer, don't care about anything we do because there's no consistency here. I thought Ronda Rousey's promo was rubbish. I hate the fact that they always have to say, ah, Natalia, you are a cornerstone of the women's division. Bayley and Sasha Banks, you did all this good stuff. It's like, it's so patronizing. When you've got like the cool stuff with all the dramatic tension of Strowman and the Shield, who is a heel? Who's a babyface here? You've got all that. And then here in the women's division, it's like, just so simplistic 80s. We're good guys. We all like each other. We're bad guys.
I just think the biggest problem with the women's division is that every single... It doesn't matter if the title is involved or not, but all the feuds just about who is mates with who.
Yes.
It does, like... Charlotte and Becky. Like, little teacup thing. We're mates, but, oh, we have to have a match. Oh, no. Mm-hmm. Sasha and Bayley for weeks and weeks and weeks. We weren't mates, but we were mates, but we are mates. And now we've got matching jackets, blah, blah, blah. We're all friends with Ember Moon. Ember Moon just can drop in and be anyone's mate whenever she wants to be. She's
really
got
popular.
Nothing else to do except the fact that she's really good. Nothing else to do except be people's mates. Ronda Rousey is mates with everyone, including the Bella Twins, who've never been on telly with her previously, I don't think, apart from SummerSlam. It just feels so pithy and stupid. It's just like everyone else is, every other person on the roster is having feuds for reasons.
Mostly.
You know, like when the men's division does stuff, which is obviously the men's division is most of it, it feels like at least it's for bragging rights or this or that or the other. And then everyone else is doing it because you said something that I don't like. And it's, you know, it's just like, you would stop being my friend anymore. It just makes it feel childish and like it's not as serious as the rest of it. And then you should, as an audience, not take it as seriously. And then to have Ronda Rousey come out having been booked incredibly strongly, booked as a woman who can hang in a man's world as well, is I think also kind of the sort of subtext of her entire push, is that, you know, Alexa Bliss gets these big, strong, burly security guards and Ronda Rousey throws them like they're nothing. She beats up Triple H in a match, who Triple H pushes the referee aside. It's like, this stupid woman, I'll beat her down. And then she kicks his ass. here, then to have her come out and stand in front of all of these women who've worked really hard to put this division over, and she's just come in, obviously done a lot for UFC and MMA, women in MMA, but not really done a lot for women in wrestling, to come out here, and then when she's getting given the title, because she's obviously the blessed one and had the easiest run to the title of all time, to then her hold that up and go, this is for all of the women, it feels incredibly patronising, because for the rest of them, their entire existence is just going, you're not my friend anymore, and that makes me sad. Yeah. And then she goes, well, I get to be a serious competitor and the baddest woman on the planet, and everyone else is like, we're the Boss and Hug Connection. We like hugs.
And I mean,
it's such a juxtaposition, and I just think it's horrible.
Yeah, Ronda's not exempt from it. Her feud with Nia Jax for a couple of weeks was based on, no, I'm Natalia's better friend. So the it's just, I think there's an underlying...
I feel like there's some dude writers there in a room.
Exactly. There's an underlying misogyny here. And it's not like, misogyny doesn't have to be like an active thing. It's just, when a bunch of guys are writing women's storylines, it's got like, you can expect some of that subtext to seep through. I think they could really do with some female writers to write, I'm not saying like just get the female writers to write the female division. They just need some female writers in general, and I think that would reflect in a better booked women's division. Yeah, so I hated all of this. I thought it was hokey.
It was horrible.
Thought it was poorly executed, and overall, it showed you how crap the Raw women's division is, but not as crap as the tag division, because at least they've got Ronda. Next up, we had the Revival versus B Team in singles competition. So Scott Dawson beat Bo Dallas first. The B Team are full on faces. They said the B stands for Brooklyn. We like your hometown. Hometown pop. And then
that's the place I live. Yeah. I like that.
Woo! And then Axel
was beaten by... Do that in London with me and see how I feel. Great.
Boo, London.
Boo.
Hey, you guys love the royal family, right? No.
No.
Then Dash Wilder beat Axel. So the idea is the Revival can beat the B Team in separate singles competition, but
they can't beat them together.
The B Team keep fluking victories.
Well,
when
they got on the
together.
Mic and they said that at the end, didn't they? They said, you might have beat us now, but we're still the tag champs. And
yeah.
Just dreadful.
The Revival are great.
The Revival are great.
I really like both their finishers, actually, in singles competition. But
I actually enjoyed the matches in the fact that it was so consummately just the Revival showing off.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was so easy. There was a good Dash catching the Lufez press from Axel and turning it into a power slam. There was good little moments in here, but it's just, I'm bored of watching a really good tag team continually come up against the flukiest two guys, and it just being like, what other contrived way can we have them win?
It's literally a joke.
Yeah.
It's like, that's the point of the B Team being champions. They keep winning by fluky means. That is literally a joke. Ergo, the tag team division
is a joke. Yeah. It's a great joke that plays out one time.
Yeah.
For a moment. Like, it plays out for that. It should have played out to the point where they won the titles. And then at that, they won the titles at the pay-per-view. Fine. Next night, they lose them.
Yeah, next night, you repackage Authors of Pain. They come in as badasses, squash the B Team in seconds, and then a new tag champ.
And then you've got a legitimate tag division again. But until the B Team stop being the tag team champions, that division is nothing.
Yeah. I really thought tonight was the night they were going to freshen it up.
I was so hopeful.
They were going to like reboot Authors of Pain, or they were going to call up another tag team.
Or they were going to have the Revival at least just pick up the belts.
Yeah.
And it was so close. There was a match. There was, all of them had a match, just not in the correct combination and not for the titles. And the right people won the matches.
Yeah,
it's just. Oh,
I mean, what?
I can't even.
So there's a promising thing about the Shield reunion, and that's Gallows and Anderson haven't been doing anything on SmackDown. Sometimes they do a trade around SummerSlam time. Maybe Balor calls back his buddies.
I would love that.
I know, but we've been burnt before. Although they did get back together in January, but that was just for Raw 25.
But the problem is they were never that much of a thing. in the sense that, like,
not in WWE.
In
no.
WWE, they weren't that much of a thing. So two Vince and the top level of Raw bookers and writers, it's not the same as bringing the Shield back. No. It doesn't, like, you know, while it will get a pop with a certain sector of fans, to them it's like, but it didn't happen here, so no one's going to know.
And they're right.
And they're right to a degree.
To an extent. But, you know, that's build them up on this show then. They're a great act. Mm. And, yeah.
You've got the baseline of building them into something, because some people, enough people in the crowds, generally speaking, know who they are and know that they are a team and know where they come from. And then you've got, that's what commentators are for, aren't they? To go like, these guys were a really good team in Japan and they won everything and they were great.
Yeah. Then we got a Roman Reigns promo backstage, just an interview to Renee Young about, you know, Brock's nasty, isn't he? But Finn, he deserves that opportunity. And then we got Stephanie backstage recovering from her... So Ronda put her in the armbar at the end of that segment.
Because she doesn't do it to... She doesn't want to put everyone in an armbar. Just some... What was it? It wasn't even grammatically correct what she said. It was like...
Just bad Pete. Just bad... Women.
I can't even remember what it was, but it was terrible.
Just bad woman.
Just bad woman.
I like the fact that Bliss was in a sling.
That was the best bit. The best bit was her in the bright pink sling, and when she said, "Look at poor Alexa Bliss," and Alexa Bliss just was pouting her little heart at it. She's really good.
The problem with Bliss is that she's quite adorable. So when she does pout, I'm not like, "Oh, you heel, you dastardly heel." I'm like, oh, "God, are you okay?
Yeah. You all right?
You're right. You want a cup of tea?" So Stephanie's in the trainer's room, and of course the heels are there, Baron Corbin and Alexa Bliss helping her out, and Kurt comes in, I don't know why, and Stephanie says, "You're going on vacation. I think you need a vacation."
He was looking for phone signal, wasn't he?
Probably. And Baron Corbin is going to be your replacement as the general manager. Baron's there looking all smug.
I thought this was going to signal the cancellation of the match.
Oh, for the
So I really, when I watched that, I was like, "Oh, that's interesting." I thought he was going to come out and go, "Well, I'm the GM. The GM now, so I don't want this match to happen. You're having a match against me, or you can't."
Didn't he do that? That totally makes sense.
Yeah, because Kurt Angle wasn't gone yet. He hadn't done his handover.
Yeah,
he hadn't written his document.
Holiday starts tomorrow.
Yeah, that's it. He hasn't put his out of office on yet.
It's great when you have to fill the logic holes, isn't it? So I mean, I heard this as a babyface announcement. I've hated Kurt as he is my favorite wrestler of all time, and you have made me hate him WWE because he's been so poorly presented as a general manager. He forgets his lines. He mumbles lines. He's just, as character wise, he's got no authority. He's undermined persistently.
I love the idea of
Corbin's been pretty good.
Yeah, Corbin as a general manager will be fun. And I think, you know, like I said earlier, give him some sheriffs now. And it could be really, really fun.
Little team of sheriffs.
Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe that's what happens with Kevin Owens when he comes back. And then you had Reigns beating Balor in the main event. We've already talked about that. It was very, very good. So overall, I gave it a 2 out of 5, actually. And that 2 out of 5 was only because of the Shield.
Yeah, do you know what? I think that's more than fair, to be honest. Like, I think there were good. There were some glimmers of hope here. Ambrose's match was pretty good. Shield reunion was good. The main event itself was actually really good and well booked. And there were glimmers of hope for the future, like moving Corbin into the GM role. The fact that the Revival actually got the victory here, so maybe there'll be a match and they'll win it. Hopefully. But obviously, we had to watch two squashes essentially there just to see that, and then everything else was just nothingy and
actually quite depressing in terms of the women's section. So yeah, that's all we've got time for today. Please click the videos that have just appeared on our laps to catch up with the latest Wrestle Talk videos, and this button right here will make you a pledge hammer on Patreon, which will help us do weekly NXT reviews. I've been Ollie Davis, this has been El Fagador, and that was Rambling.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.